Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. Wait, before the podcast, make sure you hit subscribe and leave a review after the podcast and just share it with your mates if you enjoy it, because it means the world to me. The idea of the podcast is for you all to hear conversations between me and friends, or me and artists that I look up to, or people that I find really interesting. And if you find it interesting, I'm sure somebody else will find it interesting. So it'd be amazing if you could share it. If you don't like it, then fine. Bin it off. It's fine. I'm happy with that. Anyway, podcast time. Nala. Nala has became on my radar just before lockdown. And she obviously is part of the Dirty Bird crew. And it's really nice to see new artists come through on the Dirty Bird platform. Her music is really special and really strong, really well made, and it was kind of a different vibe or a different variation of what Dirty Bird was doing at that time. And she sits really well as her own artist, which is really important to me as somebody listening to music and wanting to kind of follow an artist. So I love what she does. She's a lovely human being. I'm going to leave you with the podcast. So without further ado, Nala. Nala, what's cooking?
What's up? How are you?
Really good. How are you?
I'm good.
Sorry for getting you up so early.
It's okay. I try to wake up at like 9 a.m. every day if I can.
That's good. Do you have like Do you have like a morning ritual?
Yeah, usually I wake up and then I get coffee and then I like stare at the wall for about like 30 minutes and then my day starts.
So what point have I interrupted? Are you in your staring at wall stage?
No, I haven't even had coffee yet, we're good.
Did you want to get one?
No, it's cool.
Cool. How's life?
Life is good. I'm finally like getting into a like comfort zone with the tour life, I guess. Like it's not as crazy on my mental health. There was like some ups and downs for the first like 2 months, And then afterwards, I had a conversation with Justin Jay, and his like never ending optimism just like shook me. And I was like, all right, cool. Now I've been like good ever since.
what were the mental health issues?
It was just like, well, it's kind of like lonely on the road. Mm. And then like, you have these like great shows, and then there's like a lull, and then there's a great show. And so it's like, you're kind of just, it's like acrobats.
Yeah.
I feel like I should close my windows because it's kind of loud outside today.
Okay.
One second.
No worries. Yeah, I could hear the birds.
What have you got? Oh, yes. They annoy me.
I kind of like it. I kind of like the birds in the background. Is it not relaxing, or are they just super annoying?
Oh, it totally is. You know what's really funny about that is that when I lived downtown, I lived in this like really awesome, massive loft, but we only had like balcony windows. Yeah. We didn't have like windows throughout the rest of the apartment. So like my room never had windows. Mm. So I had like a little sun lamp that would like light up, and then birds would chirp to wake me up in the morning. And now I have like actual birds and I'm like, shut up. It's so annoying, especially because I try to record vocals. I'm sure birds are in every single thing I record these days. So
it's kind of fitting. It's kind of fitting being signed to Dirty Bird, right?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah, for Dirty Bird and Pets. I've got like all the animals.
Oh yeah, you're on Pets as well, aren't you? Yeah, that makes sense. I love the Cats and Dog Boys. They're the best.
Oh, they're the greatest. I love them too. They're so awesome.
Yeah, they're the best. I want to talk about, because from an outsider, you're still very early in your career of being DJ producer out into the public, right? I'm sure you've been doing it for years. I know you were kind of doing the circuit in Miami for a while.
Yeah.
But no one ever sees that, right? So
no, that part like doesn't even exist. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So from like the public point of view, is you're still fairly new on the scene. But for somebody fairly new on the scene, you've been doing extremely well. And it seems like it's gotten very big very quickly.
Gosh, I hope it looks like that, but I don't feel that way. But maybe I'm just like my worst critic.
How do you feel? So, I want to talk about that. How do you feel?
Well, I definitely think that like there's just lots of room for improvement. Maybe my goals are set a little high, and then and I don't know, maybe that's like my own It's a motivational thing for sure, but it's also like sometimes my own downfall. But I think like there's just definitely room for improvement.
But is there not always room for improvement?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I would hope so. I definitely like sometimes fantasize. I'm like, oh, I wonder when I get to like plateau. But I was just talking to your manager, Ryan, about that. Like, I don't even remember when, but he's like, oh, no, it never ends. And even Teed was like, there is no finish line. I'm like, no, you know, I'm like, that's crazy to me. But yeah, I mean, I guess like to some degree I am doing good right now, and that's awesome. But I am very competitive. So I'm like, okay, I got to do better. You know, I have to do more.
So are you competitive to yourself or with others?
Oh, like both.
Okay.
To myself, I'm always like, okay, we have to do one step up. But yeah, I mean, even with others, and that's the part that I think is like unhealthy. Yeah. So I try not to be that way. But again, like, you know, I always take like bad things and make it like very, like, it's my source of motivation is like all the, maybe like the negative emotion or experience. So I'm always like, okay, like, yeah, that sucked, but let's try and do better.
Give me an example. Because I feel like this is so common in careers, right? It's so common. And for me, it's like really common as well. Like I have that nearly every week to a certain extent.
Right. But it's kind of funny, right? Because like I don't know what like someone that is like strictly underground or strictly commercial has to deal with. But I do like really try to straddle like the line of both of those things, which then I think is, you get to see kind of like two worlds, and and they don't really mix very well. So it's like you can have a really great commercial success, right? And you're like, wow, this is so cool. I'm getting a lot of plays or, you know, commercial, but like you're getting like a lot of, like the data is aligning with the music. And so you're like, wow, okay, I'm doing really well. And then you're like, okay, great. Like, let me release something underground. Mm. But then the numbers don't align. And you're like, was this not a success?
Yeah.
And like, it's just like that kind of competitive thought process makes you like, it's just not healthy.
So do you, like, do you base your success on numbers?
I think, yeah, at the end of the day, like I am data driven. So like, sure, it's initially a like artistic success personally, because I wrote the song, it got signed. So clearly there's like a level of like approval towards it. But then like when the numbers come in, and this is something that actually I was just talking about with, there's this really awesome producer from San Francisco called UFO. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he does like jungle and drum and bass. He's been around since like before Dirty Bird. Like Claude Von Stroke tried to sign to his label before Dirty Bird started and was not accepted. But anyway, so I was talking to him actually this weekend, and he was, John Tejada teaches at USC and he had a class of kids, and I guess they're all kind of dealing with like issues regarding production, and the biggest issue is that they have this like psychological like wall that's stopping them from writing, because they feel like that the numbers are not aligning with their writing, so they feel like they're not doing it well. So they're like, oh, I'm not producing well because the data isn't aligning. So I think it's kind of like a millennial Gen Z thing, is that we're like not in this bubble of like, this is just my art and I don't care what the numbers mean. Like, cause there are like, we don't really have that kind of data set, versus now we have like in real time data. I mean, like you go on Spotify the day of a release, you could see the numbers just ticking, you know? So it doesn't, I don't think it creates a very good like mental headspace. And apparently that is an issue that's also like plaguing like students at USC right now, is that they're hitting a wall of their own, like
I think if I'm honest with you, I think it's just a issue in all walks of life when anything digital happened. I don't know if you remember when when Instagram kind of first put the like button on, and when you could see how many likes people get. Like, it got to the point where people were trying to, they would compare their photos to their friends because one got more likes than than others, and I think taking that out of the music and how other people can kind of relate to that, I feel that happens every day. But I also think, is that something that we've always done as human beings, is measure ourselves somehow based on something? And
yeah, I mean, if you want to get really existential, I mean, that is like the that is the component of human existence, is competitiveness. So yeah, it's like, I think about that in like a sociological sense as well, because I'm just like, what's going on in this world? And I'm just kind of like, all right, well, this is like part of human nature, right? Is to be competitive and compare, and, you know, the strong survive, this kind of mentality, like survival of the fittest, you know? Yeah. But it's just, I don't think it's healthy, right? Like, I think there is, like, it would be beneficial for all of us to just find inner peace, but I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah, but I think also, I love the idea of inner peace, right? But I think, does inner peace, have you truly met, like, I want to really know, have you truly met somebody that's fully at peace?
Well, I don't know, fully at peace, but I did meet Sadhguru, like the super famous guru guy. And he's just like constantly like neutrally happy. So I was like, okay.
I wonder if he does
anything. He's doing something right.
I wonder if he's like super weird in other ways that no one knows about.
I know. He knows. Like he has he's currently on the thing about saving soil. So that's how I ended up meeting him. It was really random. I was with Will I Am from the Black Eyed Peas, and like Pasquale was there from Insomniac. It was like such a weird group of people, and I was just there like, okay, I'm here watching Sadhguru talk to like 10 people, and it was really interesting. And he was just talking about the importance of soil, and now I follow his Instagram, and it's full of really great like isms about how to be happy in life. We've really gone off the rail. Sorry. Okay.
No. I like this. I don't want this just to be about music. Because the thing is like I listened to a podcast with him before, and I'd never heard of him before, and I couldn't carry on listening. I didn't finish it all because I'm like, this isn't real life. Like I know for him, like I want to know how he got there. Like, how did he get to that point where he's super at peace? Because I feel like that's the issue. What 99.99% of the people are trying to get to is like, what was the journey for you to get there? It's all good. Like we all like inspirational quotes, right? We all like go on Instagram and be like, yeah, I like that inspirational quote. Let's share it. But then we forget about it 10 minutes later because we've not seen that our track's been supported on Housework. Right,
exactly.
So it's like, how do we, or like some dude or some girl has rejected you, or like whatever it is in life, like there's a point where something has to break that peace. And is there such thing as peace, like internal peace? Like does he really have that? Is it just a front that he sells books?
I mean, I would say that from like a cognitive psychology perspective, if every day you are practicing a specific mindset, and I think I've recently watched one where he was like, I try to treat every day as if I'm like kind of like a newborn, just like with pure curiosity. I don't judge anything. I just kind of like let it happen and just inquire and like just basically trying to withhold judgment. And I don't know if that's humanly possible, right? We don't really know what's going on inside of him. But from a cognitive perspective, like scientifically, if you did practice that every single day, it would just become like a force of habit. Mm. So it's possible. I don't know. I have no idea what goes on inside his head. I feel this exact same way about Justin Jay, by the way. I'm like, are you ever mad? It's like my question. It's like, I'm like, you are like the happiest person I've ever met. Do you ever get mad?
Yeah, but I know with Justin, like I know he has struggles through being an artist, and I know he has struggles in life, and it's just how you deal with them, right?
Right. So he's like super optimistic and happy. I've seen him like navigate through all sorts of weird things, and I'm like, wow, he's just like chilling, like smiling and just grateful to be here. I really like that attitude.
No, I love that attitude. I think there's people, we need these people in the world to kind of look up to and mimic ourselves on, and even if we can take like a small percentage of what they do, and then it kind of can help our lives.
I totally did, and that's what I was saying before, is that like I was going through like a tour slump where I was just like, not, it was just, I just felt like I was getting battered. It's like constant like flight delays, or like I don't know, hospitality issues, shows, some shows not doing well, some shows doing great. So the ups and downs were just like this. And I was talking to Justin Jay about it, and he's like, you know what? Like I played a show in a really small city, and there were like three people there. And he's like, and this is someone that plays for huge crowds.
Yeah.
He's like, and you know, it's like a small city, but those three people were so excited to see me. And like, I was just so excited to play for them. So at the end of the day, it was still a really great show because I had fun, they had fun, and that's all that matters. And I was like, oh, that is such an optimistic way to view things. Like to go through all the trouble of getting to some place and then like it not being a well-promoted show or whatever the case may be in that circumstance, and to still come out of it and be like, that was good. It's like, that is like something I aspire to.
I would like to see his process on how long it took him to get to the point where, oh, everyone had fun.
Right.
Because for example, like I played a show in Nashville, and I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but I played a show in Nashville and there was a bunch of hype about it. And then it was just an awful show. Like it was terrible.
And that happens.
It happens. It's life, right?
So often.
The best of us.
It's like up and down.
But if I look back at it, everybody there had the best time.
Right.
Did I have the best time? No. And it's okay for me not to have the best time. It's okay to not have an amazing time all the time, right? Like that's just what life's about. But it's what I do with that afterwards. It's, do I sit in a wall and go, oh my God, that's depressing? Or do I look at it and go, there's a lot of room to grow in Nashville for me. Like, there was still 50, right. There was still 50 to 100 people there. Like, next time we need 200 people there.
Right.
And how do I work towards, like that. Yeah, and how do I work towards that for the next time? Because I'm not fucking Chris Lake. I'm not Fisher. Like, I'm not whoever is that's going to sell 1,000 tickets there. I know I'm not that person. So I think it's like, how high do you hold your expectations? Are your expectations actually a reality of who you are as a human being or as an artist? Or are your expectations super high, which actually sets yourself up to fail every time you go to a show?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, now I get ticket counts from my agent just to know, like,
it's dangerous that.
Where I'm at. But I had a show recently, like in Dallas, for instance, where I had a lot of core, like I'd say like a handful of core fans there. Mm. But overall, it was my first time in Dallas.
Amazing.
And it wasn't a busy show at all. It was on a Thursday, also on top of everything else. And you know, we didn't sell that many tickets, and that was something I went. But and then in retrospect, like in perspective, also the next night I was playing in Austin, and it was like not sold out, but it was probably like 500 to 700 people there. Yeah. So it was like, it's just like up and down. So I'm like, this is not, first of all, something that I should be basing my self-worth off of. But yeah, so I went to that Dallas show and with the expectation that there wouldn't be that many people there. I had already just spoken to Justin Jay. So I had this new outlook on life where I was like, even if there's two people, I'm going to DJ for them and I'm going to make sure they have the best time of their life. And yeah, there was probably like 50 to 100 as well. Yeah. And I did. I DJed my ass off for this like 50 to 100 group of people. I was giving out shots. I was going crazy. And they had the best time of their life. They were living. People were doing like breakdancing, like, you know. And so it's, you know, in my head, it's like, yeah, I mean, that show wasn't great. Mm. And like, I probably won't be coming back to Dallas for a little bit. Yeah. But until then, you know, I'm, at least those people can go home and be like, she was fun.
Yeah.
You know? And then of course, like I went the next day to Austin and that show was a blowout. So, I've noticed lately I have been having like shows like that where it's like one show's meh, the other one's like great. So that is like the elasticity of my brain right now where I'm just like, okay, I can't, if I base my validation on these like external factors, I'm going to literally lose my shit. So I just gotta be like internally just thrilled to be there, play for people, make sure they're happy. So that everyone can go home and be like, that was great.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I like that. I think for me is like since coming back to touring, which is like over a year ago now, like I think for me, that's been a one main major part for me is to like actually try and enjoy it. Because there was so many times that I was very similar to you where it's every show has to be a sellout, and if it's not a sellout, it's failed. And that kind of mentality of like the only way to be a successful DJ is to sell out every show, it's utter bullshit. It's the most head fucky thing, because you're just constantly looking at the crowd and going, oh, it's not a sellout. And then you're not even enjoying it, which means that they're not enjoying it. And it's just this kind of like,
they can tell.
Yeah, they can tell. 100% they can tell. Like even when I played that Nashville show, they probably could tell that I was like, this is not fun.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the thing I started doing is like, forcing myself to have fun and getting really, really interactive with the crowd. Mm. That was like one thing, especially if it's a small crowd, like just like engaging with them, handing out shots, like taking from my rider, because I'm not drinking like every show. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Let's get you drunk. and like just trying to make the best out of it. Because like, you know, at the end of the day, if it becomes work, then like we got into this because it was fun, not because it was work. So if we're getting into it and starting to feel like work, we're not going to be happy in this industry. And like, we're really lucky to be in this industry, I would say. So, I've been in like a perspective shift because I really was like, bumming out, and especially with just like flights are, I mean, I make this joke all the time, but like our booking fees are not for the show. They're for the flight and travel to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's 'cause it's just so miserable. So I am trying to just like have fun when I do land in these cities. Mm. Another thing I've been doing is like getting really familiar with the cities that I'm in, like in terms of like culture,
yeah,
and nature. And that's been really helpful too.
So
I've been finding ways to like alleviate the suffering.
No, I feel that. So do you try and go to the city like earlier and just like spend time in the city?
I mean, it depends, but like I was just in Alaska. And so instead of flying back to LA, I stayed in Alaska and then went to the next weekend to Electric Forest.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. Like, I've noticed that nature is like the ultimate cure to everything. 100%.
So yeah,
it's the best. So I played in Alaska and then I stayed for 5 days. I got to see like bears and mooses, and I flew in a glacier, like on a helicopter to a glacier with like what's so not.
Amazing.
And we got to drink water out of a glacier, and it was like, it was, and these are like little things. I'm like, this is why I do this.
Yeah.
It's like, so I could travel the world and see these amazing things and play music for people that like Alaska. Like I never thought I'd ever go to Alaska. And I'm finding ways to like make the best out of the experience. And yeah, staying in cities and experiencing like the nature and the food and things like that really help. I'll try to fly early enough where I can get dinner at the very least. And I'll stay in certain places if I have like the accommodations to do so. So like with Austin, my Dallas show was like on a Thursday. I had Friday off, and then my show in Austin was Saturday. So I got to explore Austin. Yeah. I went to like this river, and I got to swim in the river. It was
it's
like
beautiful
like that.
There, isn't it? It's so cool. Yeah,
it's so pretty.
I love Austin so much. I nearly moved there this year. I was so close to moving.
It's a nice city, and the food scene is like popping right now.
Yeah, it's solid. It's just so fucking expensive. It's just as expensive as LA now.
It's become that way, yeah. That's because everyone in LA moved there.
Yeah, motherfuckers. You LA people. Well, you're not even LA people. Were you born in Miami? Are you from Miami?
No, I'm from LA originally, actually.
Motherfuckers. You're one of those.
I know. Well, actually, no, everyone is a transplant and then they move.
That's very true, actually. That's very true.
The original LA people, we don't bother anyone.
No,
okay.
This is true. Yeah, there's not many original LA people.
There isn't. Yeah. So, yeah, I grew up here. I did go to Miami. It's kind of a complicated story, but to sum it up, I went halfway through high school and then college.
Yeah. Which one do you prefer?
I love LA. I like the food here, and I like the nature here. I find the people really interesting. You really encounter like just like the most unique people here, because everyone is fulfilling some sort of dream. I recently like met this like entire apartment. It was like a house, I guess, of like Ukrainian people, artists. And they were like the nicest, coolest people. They all are. It's just like it was like an artistic outpost for Ukraine, basically. But like they were all super sweet, and they're incredibly talented. And like, I don't know. I just feel like I wouldn't have gotten that experience in Miami.
Yeah.
You know, Miami, I guess, is like a little bit different, but yeah, I mean, and also I like the diversity of the music here. Whereas like, I felt like for a long time, especially when I was living in Miami, it was pretty like, it was like tech house. It was like tech house or rap. And that was it. Like EDM, tech house, rap.
Yeah.
And I really like live music. So it's nice to meet people. Like, for instance, like this Ukrainian guy, his name is like Aspen Forest. And he released like the most flawless indie album, like indie alternative album I've ever heard that no one here is going to hear. Like, because it's just like on Spotify with like no promotion and no label, nothing. And it's like, those are cool experiences that I get to have in LA, which I think that because Miami is a smaller city, I wouldn't get to have that same experience.
Miami's a different country as well. It's not.
It is a different country.
It's not America.
It's basically like Latin America and Europe.
Yeah. It's not America at all. Maybe the laws, maybe. I don't know. Apart from that, it's not really.
Yeah.
So with your new Ukrainian friend, do you think he compares himself to others?
Oh, he like does not care. He does it because he loves it. And that's it. Like, it's like, but, and I'm over here like, well, like you should be on TikTok or something, right? Like you need to promote it somehow, you know? And he like made these music videos and like, it really is like, so it's such a flawless album. It almost feels like it was written by AI.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's kind of like, an interesting experience. Cause like, I'm so, I guess at this point, so industry where I'm like, well, you know, like you, people need to hear this. Like, how are you getting this to people's ears? You know? Cause like this deserves all the attention. And he just doesn't, he's like, whatever, next album. I'm like, what? So
there's something amazing about people. Like they're the people that we need to hang around with.
Yeah, totally.
Because
exactly.
They're the people that are truly, I feel like they're the inner peace people where they've just somehow got there where they don't care. But I guess they're also the people that can't pay their rent.
Well, his house is pretty nice. Honestly, I don't know how he pays his rent. But that's also like a common thing that you find in LA is like, that's how are LA. You paying for rent?
No one works in LA.
No one, yeah.
No one earns money in LA. I don't know how.
Yeah, I mean, for years, before I got signed with Dirty Bird, I was doing like the local, like DJ circuit, like any local gig, anything from like, you know, opening slots at nightclubs to like hotel gigs. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And it wasn't consistent by any means and it didn't pay very much. So in between that, like I was also secretly like trimming weed for drug dealers. So, you know, I mean, it's legal here, but I don't know if that operation was. But yeah, I mean, like anything to make money where I didn't have to get like a 9-to-5 job, which would take away from my like goals. So yeah, people in LA, I think we all have like secret jobs, you know, or like things we don't really tell people.
why do we not tell people? Or why do people not tell people?
About trimming weed?
No, just about just secret jobs. Like people don't talk about their jobs.
Well, I guess because they're trying to uphold an image, right? And also it was not part of my career path. I wasn't going to be like, yeah, I am like really passionate about trimming weed for people, you know?
But
like,
it is part of your career path.
Well, it is. Well, it's a part of the story. Yeah. But it wasn't like what I was trying to
do.
Achieve.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a lot of like, no, I am a DJ. I just DJ.
Yeah.
Even though like, yeah, I was just doing like local gigs at the time.
Do you think you've, feel like you need to have a persona, an image for people to kind of take seriously? Or do you think if you were to tell somebody that you have another job that people are going to judge you differently?
It wasn't necessarily that. Like I could have done a 9-to-5 job and been like, and I do this during the day. But my dad was like very, he told me this quote from like, I think it was like Jay Leno, who was like, if you want to pursue a career in the arts, you can't do anything else. You can't have the security of a regular job because then it'll take away from your like drive to achieve something within art. So that's why like I just didn't, I just like didn't get a real job for a long time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, like in terms of like my like side hustles, yeah, I didn't really want to tell people about things I was doing. It's not exactly like the most admirable job. so yeah, I was just trying to focus on like the good part, which is like, oh yeah, I'm a DJ. I write music and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's something about that, isn't it? Because there is like a big hoo-ha or hush-hush of people that still have jobs and work in the arts. And I don't know why. I really don't know why that is. Maybe it is for like what you said with the Jay Leno. It's like, I don't agree with it personally, but maybe that's what it is.
I have no idea. My dad was very adamant about like forcing me into the creative world. He's like, you got to do it. So I guess, yeah, it's interesting that he did tell me that. He was like, be broke so that you could one day be good in music.
I love that.
I'm like, okay, dad, thanks. He's an artist himself. So
I was
so
gonna say, like, is he an artist himself?
Yeah. He worked in like the film industry and like he's older. He's like retired now. But he was working in like New York, Broadway. Not necessarily Broadway, off Broadway. but yeah, he was an actor. So
that's cool. Do you think you got the creative side from him?
I think it was encouraged, but no one in my family is in music. So they're like, where did that come from? I'm like, But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, my family was definitely encouraging of the arts. And I think all their friends were also artists. I mean, it's just like, if you had a kid, you know, I guess you're in music, but like, you would kind of be encouraging of like their artistic endeavors as well.
Yeah, totally. I think, not that I ever want kids, but yeah, I think it's the, there's so many people that have had like really unsupportive parents.
Oh yeah. And that's a huge part of it.
And I think it's really sad that there's a huge part of somebody's life, especially your kid's life, that you don't support because they don't align with your views of what life should be. It's weird.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think also it's a cultural thing. I think a lot of those kids come from like, they're like first generation.
Yeah.
So maybe they have like, their parents are like kind of really holding out hope that they, you know, can find a career path that will support the family, yeah, you know? Totally. Which personally, I think music can be that. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that because there's a lot of programs in like underprivileged communities out here that teach kids how to produce music and things like that. So I think people are starting to realize that is like a viable career path. But yeah, I think for a long time, most people are like, why aren't you going to be a lawyer or a doctor? You know? So,
So when talking about music as a career path, when was it for you where you were like, this is the one, this is how I'm going to make my money?
Oh, I got fired from my marketing job because I was DJing. So, but it was, I mean, they laid me off. They were really kind about it, but I was in college. I was studying advertising in college in Miami. And then I was already working in the field and I was making like $15 an hour. And then I started DJing on the weekends and I had just started, but I'd get gigs and I'd get like $100 or $200. Right. And I'm like, what the heck? This is like the amount I make doing like work all week in an office.
Yeah.
Like why, what? So my motivation like just naturally declined at work. And I would just sit there and like be so miserable. And they noticed and they were just like, listen, like we think that you just like aren't really passionate about this anymore. So we're going to like give you like a paid severance and like, good luck, have fun being a DJ. And I was like, all right, cool. So I was like, kind of like a, like, well, go little bird.
Yeah.
And so for like a month and a half, I had like my paid severance. And then I was able to kind of get established more as like a DJ. Okay. And then I moved to LA after college and had to start all over again because I had a good circuit going in Miami where I was making enough to survive. And then I came to LA and had to start all over again.
Yeah.
And so that took about like a year.
What year was this?
2016.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it just was like a slow building process. And I got to a good point right before the pandemic, but I am grateful for the pandemic in one sense because I was so wrapped up in like the local circuit that it would have been hard for me to break out of it had I not had like a whole year of like no gigs.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
Local circuits are really interesting, aren't they? Because I feel like you have them in every single city. And I was never in one personally. Like, well, I was in one in Ibiza where I was just always doing shows in Ibiza as a resident. And then it got to a point for me where I was like, I have to stop doing this to grow.
It's a good thing and then a bad thing at the same time.
It's a hard thing. I don't know about you, how it was for you back in LA, but like I was never in the Bristol scene in the UK. I was never been a part of the Bristol scene and kind of played occasionally. But to then get into the Bristol scene now where I'm a bigger name is even harder.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard this. Actually, Walker Noyce had a similar story in regards to New York.
Yeah.
And I had a similar story with Miami. Miami didn't book me for the first year outside of the pandemic. And that's my home turf as a DJ. Yeah. So it was like I had to go back and hang out with everyone and like buddy up with the promoters and be like, remember me? And that's when they started being like, we love her. And then it's like, that's when they started booking me again. But it is kind of strange. And, you know, actually, this is really funny, too, is that, like, they talk about it in that Kanye West documentary where he's like, yeah, Chicago was my biggest supporter until they weren't, until I was so big that they didn't want to put on for me anymore because they felt like I turned my back on them. You know, it's like things like that. It's like a very interesting, like, it's like almost like a power dynamic.
Yeah, it's almost like you're allowed to be your hours until, until you get so big that everybody else wants you. Now we don't want you. Now we're on to the next thing.
Yeah, right.
It's weird.
Like, you didn't bring us with you, so then we're leaving you behind.
So weird. Human beings are interesting creatures, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, I studied psychology initially in college. That was, like, going to be my career path prior. Before, I was like, wow, this is a little heavy. I don't think I could do this anymore. went to advertising, the most, like, superficial industry. Because I was like, get me out of here. It's too deep. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of like what I write musically is like a psychoanalysis of the human condition, I think. So I'm always just like really like thinking about these things with my morning coffee when I stare at my wall.
Staring at walls. When did the producing start for you then? Because that wasn't long ago. When did the producing record start for you? Because it wasn't long ago, surely.
No, I started about 6 months after I picked up DJing. Okay. So 2016.
Cool.
And I had a weird mentorship path in regards to music production. First, I started, like, when I first started learning, I was learning through an engineer that worked with DJ Khaled in Miami.
Amazing.
So that wasn't, like, the best because it's, like, hip-hop. And it's also very, like, hip-hop is, like, pretty simple, I would say, in terms
you're gonna
of, like,
have
textures.
So, you're going to have so many people kill you for saying that. Just to let
I know. I mean, it's okay. But you know what I mean? It's like, you're not like, you could technically have like a lot more, but like, especially like at that time, it was like trap. So it was like bass.
Well, I feel like hip hop is the instrumental side of hip hop is a vehicle for the voice, right?
Yeah.
Whereas house and techno doesn't necessarily have a voice, or sometimes the voice is the vehicle for the actual record.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, I mean, it was like interesting to start there. It's just a different sound. It's just different approaches, and like it requires like different synth. Like, there's just not like a lot of synth work, you know, things like that. Which is like where I love to create the most is within like melodies and vocals and synths. But then from there, I ended up moving to LA, and I ended up working with this guy Nusi, who came from like a indie experimental background. He was in a band called 100 Waters, and then he like left to start his own creative project, and that's when I had met him. So he taught me all of these like really like bizarro techniques and styles, and like that sent me on like a whole different journey. So I got taken into like the underground really hard, and then I like slowly started taking my way back, and it was in 2019 I had released an EP that was like down tempo and like indie, and I was like, okay, like I'm a DJ, I can't be releasing like band music. So I was like, I need to start going into like the electronic space, and that's when I started working with Barkley from Dirty Bird Club on Stroke. Is right when I decided, okay, I need to work with a label, and I need to like make music for a label now. And he was like a really good mentor for the electronic music process. But I've had like, again, like hip hop into like indie experimental weird music into like, you know, tech house commercial, like kind of commercial, dance music, I guess, underground. My interpretation of commercial is so different than probably like everyone else's.
What is your interpretation of commercial?
Is that it's it's relatively catchy. Like,
okay.
So yeah. Whereas like, to me, underground music is like not catchy at all. It's like weird, disjointed, crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Left field.
I think underground is a really weird saying, because truly for me, like, underground is like, there's zero money being made.
Right.
There's
right.
It's like
and the numbers don't line up.
there's no numbers because it's underground.
There's no numbers.
Like it's literally like a community of people that don't like letting other people in their community. That's what it is for me.
Well, that is a thought that I have in my head, like every day when I wake up and choose the violence of being both in the underground and in the commercial, I guess, right, spaces, is that I'm kind of like, I think about those people and I think I have their thought, like that ideal in my head where they're like, oh, she's on this label or she's releasing this type of music. And then I come out and I release an underground EP and I'm like, and what, you know, I have a little bit of a rebellion to me where I'm like, oh, you can tell me. I have a song actually that like, I actually wrote a song about this, which now is getting signed to Black Book, where it's like, when they tell me what to do, I don't listen. When they tell me what to do, I just do what I want and I give them nothing because it's not about you. I can do whatever I want. If I want to make underground music, I'll make underground music. If I want to do commercial stuff, I'll do commercial stuff. It doesn't mean that I'm any better or worse as an artist. But I do get very like rebellious towards that attitude of like, oh, she's just not underground enough. You know, like she's not playing like weird music enough or she's not on like this label or whatever, you know. I don't know.
I've never been cool enough to be underground. So it's like always been a thing for me where it's like, I've always had the want to be cool and underground, but it's just never happened for me. And I think it's something that I actually grew to laugh about myself is that like, I'm just never going to be cool enough to be that cool person that everyone's like, oh my God, they're so cool and underground. Which we will have somebody that I don't know about you, but we will look up to people that are like, oh my God, imagine being that artistical, have that amount of artistical freedom. But realistically, we all do if we want.
Right. I mean, and I'll do it occasionally, right? I had that Nicki Nair EP. I did like, even the Pets one was kind of on the border, kind of weird. And this is like kind of where that data thing comes in again. It wasn't like as satisfying. To release a record that was like underground wasn't as satisfying as releasing a record where everyone's like, wow, this is so good. Because we have to remember like the community for people that like and listen to underground music is primarily other DJs.
Yeah.
And like a small handful of like, you know, fans. Granted, like there is a level where you could become like a Fortet, right? But like I would say he's had a couple commercial Fortet successes in terms of dance music at this point.
I think the thing with Fortet is that he's actually extremely commercial and people aren't willing to accept that he's extremely commercial.
Right?
Like
if the data's there, right? But anyway, so yeah, like I had these releases and I was like, man, this doesn't feel nearly as good as when everyone is so happy and excited about a record release. And I do play my Pets record in DJ sets. But like, I don't play my underground EP in DJ sets because, and this is something that I've actually like identified years ago is that like, I don't feel comfortable. There's like this kind of, the emotion that like under some underground music, like creates is kind of this like isolating cold feeling. And this is not necessarily true for everything, but this is like what I've noticed with like the extremely non-catchy like underground stuff that some people really enjoy playing is that I just feel cold and like, I don't know. And I like to create warmth. I want the room to feel hot, sweaty and warm, you know? So it's kind of weird.
I can kind of relate in the opposite way. Where like at this moment in time, I'm writing a lot more vocal based records, a lot more. And I'm struggling to get them in my sets because I don't necessarily play super vocally house records. So to the point where my next like bigger single that's coming out in September, like I've gone and rewrote that whole record. So it fits in my sets, but it also has the vocals. Whereas before it was like quite melodic-y and like chord based and it still worked as a club record, but I just didn't feel like I could put it in my sets. and feel comfortable that it's going to slam every time. It's like more so one. It would be like more so like the one for the fans. So
right, okay.
It's like now I'm trying to be like, okay, how do I make a song that's been written as a song into a club record that still works as a song, but also works in a situation where I can play it in my sets.
Right.
Because I love playing really obscure records in my sets just to see what happens to the crowd.
I mean, I do, I guess I play obscure records, but I'll play a lot of different genres. When I first started working with Barclay, I always said, I was like, oh, I'm open format underground. But there has to be, I don't know what it is that I'm looking for in records when I play them, but there is like some level of catchiness totally. Or groove to it.
Mm.
So that even if it is underground, it still has like...
Has to be a good record at the end of the day.
A vibe. I mean, I could technically go and like just go off kilter into like a crazy breaks thing, which I do sometimes, but yeah. Sorry, I just realized my computer's not plugged in.
All right. About to die. We're 47 minutes in. Good job. We didn't lose power.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And this is my second podcast so far. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
We're back. Yeah, this is my second podcast that I'm recording today. And...
Oh, wow.
My room, I've got another one after this, and my room is starting to get really fucking sweaty. It's not nice.
Uh-oh.
And
too much energy. You're
too
like...
much sweat. that's one thing the Dirty Bird crew have always been really good at is kind of, I like that, the open format vibe. And they've always done a really good job, and that's kind of where I learned it the most, is that you can actually, you don't just have to play one thing through your sets. You can jump around and kind of, as long as it works,
right,
it's a really interesting concept, because I think my, not my introduction, but like a huge part of my career growing up was in Ibiza, and that was in 2008, and then that was like through the minimal house days. And
it's a very
so
purist
boring.
Culture there for sure. Or in general, like Europe, I think has a very like hard purist like attitude towards music. I mean, I don't think Scream is like that, but like that is like a thing. And for a long time in like my own Instagram bio, I used to have like anti-purist, like, nope, I am not a purist by any means. I think it's personally kind of boring, but
yeah, I think that's the thing, is I just want people to have fun. And I don't think everybody wants to listen to the same record over and over again, or the same loop.
Right.
There's very interesting DJs that I don't want to kind of say who they are, because, yeah, it's probably not fair. But they're massive DJs, huge DJs. And they walk this line of being very boring, but then play like... one or two records throughout the set that is that isn't a, like, it's just a huge record generally that would be a big record in everyone's sets, but the way they've played it, and because the crowd is so bored for such a long time,
the bar is set so low that like the small little bump is like
it's like no, and it is, and I think there's been records that have like blown up because of those moments. And
yeah, it's interesting.
It's really interesting. Yeah, it is. It's really interesting how the art of DJing can completely change things. On like you'll play one record at one point of the night, and then you'll play it the next day at a different part of the night, and it would be a completely different record. It would sound completely different. It would be response. The response would be completely different, which is weird.
Yeah, that is definitely the biggest part of the art of DJing, is like how the records are played and like at one point. And that is something that I have noticed, because like you could find a song and download it and play it in your set, and it'll maybe sound awkward. Then you like listen to this other DJ play it, and it flows perfectly with this other thing, and it just creates this big momentous like, you know, explosion. And it's, I'm like, okay, that is like such a huge part of it.
I'm always so jealous of that. When you like play the record and you're like, oh, it didn't do what it did for that person. And I'm like, what happened? Such a fucker. Such a fucker.
What happened?
I had it with, so I did for my last LA show, I think it was an exchange. I had made like an intro track of my record called Searching, and that was one of the records that I struggled to play in my sets because it's a little bit more song based and vocally. And so I was like, fuck it, let's make an intro record for it. And the DJ before me was playing live, so there was like a changeover, and I then, so there was like a lot of silence. There's probably like 5-10 minutes of silence. And then I played the intro, which was the Searching record, and it fucking went off. Like, it was like, I was like, shit the bed. Like, this worked really well.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And then literally the night after, I did exactly the same thing, and it just fell on its ass.
No. That's so funny. I mean, yeah, it really is just kind of like, you have to like read, like feel the room out and be like, is it time to do this? Yeah, it's so weird. Cause I also started recently like incorporating my own vocals like live.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, I do vocals for my music anyway. And a lot of the vocals that I'm playing are really hype. I'm like just yelling on a microphone. So it just kind of gets everyone really riled up, but it works. So it works really well in like super big rooms.
Yeah.
And then like smaller rooms, it's kind of like, meh, you know? So
is that because you feel more awkward?
No, it's just like, I think the energy is not right. Mm. So even if it is like a sold out show, like they'll just, it's like, you know, it's like a smaller room, maybe it's a daytime. I don't know. I just noticed that like certain places it's good, it works really well, and other places it doesn't. I don't know.
No, I feel you.
For instance, like I was at Electric Forest, killed it, right? Like everyone loved the vocals. I thought that was super fun. It got a lot of people to come to my stage, which was great because you're really fighting for attention at festivals. Yeah. But then I played in DC, which maybe it's just not that type of crowd. They're not as like, woo, you know, they're a little bit more like...
You're pretty much DJing to a bunch of politicians.
Culturally, they're just a little bit more put together.
Yeah, you're DJing to a bunch of politicians.
Right. So I'm like, maybe they just don't want like a rowdy girl, you know? Also, it was bad timing. Like, I flew in the day after the Roe versus Wade thing. And so I was just like...
Yeah, that's not a good time.
I'm just like yelling about like being a bad bitch. And I'm just like, I don't... Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not, especially DC. As much that I'm not talking shit on DC, but it's a very interesting city.
It's an interesting culture. I spoke a lot with the people that threw the party, and then like also their friends about just like the things that I had noticed culturally about that city that I was like, wow, this place is interesting. I can go on like my psychoanalysis of DC.
Come on, psychoanalysis. I want to hear it.
I don't know if I want to go into maybe like personally we can talk about it. I don't want to like talk about it publicly. But you know what? People were really nice out there. And I had a good time. The hospitality was awesome. And they took me on a boat. I got to see like,
oh, nice.
It was a good party. There was like one guy that like, there was one guy that kept requesting music and he was requesting all like men. He's like, so it was like Mac Miller, John Summit. And I was just like, you know, and maybe it's just because of the times we're in right now, but he like turned to the girl and he's like, she's a man hater. What? And I was like, whoa, what are you talking about? I'm like, I play men's music all the time. I just don't have those artists. Like, yeah. I don't play that. And then it like escalated into like more just chaos with that guy.
He just sounds like a dickhead. He just sounds like a dickhead.
Oh, he wasn't good. He was not a good one.
I actually got asked to play Drake the other day.
Oh, because Drake's house music now.
No, but it wasn't even Drake's house music. It was before the album came out. It amazes me because I actually love this sounds really condescending and I don't mean it in a condescending way, but I love the naivety of somebody coming into a club that's never experienced a house show before or something like that and asking the DJ to play Drake because that's what they do every weekend.
Yeah. You know, what's kind of funny is, and I was just talking about this with someone like, given how like much conversation there is about song requests, you would think by now like everyone would know not to do that, but I guess not. Maybe they just don't know. I have no idea, but you would think maybe they just don't care. I don't know.
I think what happens is if you think about it, our world is our world to us. It's the only thing that happens, right? Our world in the grand scheme of the world is fucking tiny.
Oh, that's true.
Super tiny. So you get somebody that is part of a friend group that one of their persons or two of the people in that friend group knows who's DJing, and then they just drag everyone else along. And in that friend group, 90% of them all go to hip hop clubs every weekend or open format clubs and request songs. So I agree with you to a certain extent, but I also disagree because our world is so small. Like although we see like 5,000 cap venues, like festivals, 100,000, like EDC is like, but realistically in EDC, our world in EDC is still tiny when you compare it to like the Tiestos and all of those guys, and then you go and listen to what Tiesto is releasing and you're like, okay, yeah, this is worlds apart. Like, this isn't even comprehensible. Like, you can't put two and two together. So yeah, it's fucking annoying. But we are the underground of music.
Yeah, even though we're not like the deepest trenches of the underground.
No,
still underground.
Yeah.
One thing I started doing recently is like I have like a couple normie friends, and I'll ask them. I'll ask them. I'll be like, so what are your thoughts? Like when a DJ is posting on Instagram, like, oh, ticket giveaway. Like, what's your thoughts? And like my friend, like I love her. She's like, oh, that's so nice. That means like he wants to be nice. And I'm like, okay, like to us, it's like, oh, the show's not doing well. We have to do a ticket giveaway, right? Like, you know, but like to like her, she's like, oh wow, what a nice DJ.
Yeah.
But it's nice to like, I like to like ask just to see like what the general pop thinks. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I like how you call your friends a normie.
Yeah.
Do you say that to her face?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, like I once went on a date with a guy who referred to himself as a normie to me.
How did that date go?
I was like, all right, well, it's nice knowing you. I'm just kidding.
Could you date? I take it you've dated guys outside of the music industry.
I've tried.
Yeah.
I've gone on dates.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've dated anyone that's like, that isn't involved at this point for the last few years.
Do you think it's easier to date somebody in the industry?
I just kind of keep to like my circle.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I mean, having something in common really helps, right? Yeah. Lifestyle also, because like a normie, as this person was saying, wakes up at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Goes to bed at 8 or something like that. So it's kind of like another thing he was saying was like, oh, I'm just trying to get used to the idea. This was like our second date. Oh, I'm just trying to get used to the idea of like going out every weekend.
I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, me going out every weekend doesn't even mean that I'm partying. Like, it just means that I'm like stopping by this show to say hi to a friend, stopping by this show to say hi to another friend, you know, things like that. It's like, maybe it's like networking. But yeah, so I think definitely like I've stuck within the industry just because at least I don't feel judged for my lifestyle.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? The whole dating thing.
Oh yeah.
Because I think,
I mean, especially as a girl, like I'm not out here dating my like fans, for instance, yeah. Cause I think for guys, I feel like that's like the okay.
Why is it not okay for a woman?
Well, I'm like, who is this person? Is he going to kidnap me? Like, I don't know, you know, like I get like kind of like scared, you know, yeah. I'm like, it's kind of like a safety thing. And you know, maybe like, I don't know how it works for other people, but like, I try to keep protected.
I respect that totally. And I think it's definitely different for a woman to date. Generally, there's the safety aspect of it, right?
That we don't
have as guys. Like, let's be honest, there's not many guys getting beaten up by their girlfriends or anything like that. It's like, and if you are, fucking go to the gym. sorry to anybody that has been. I apologize. That was a joke. But like, yeah, it must be tough.
It's weird. Because really, like, my dating pool then becomes like other degenerate DJs, which is not my choice, not my first choice. And then it's like, or like music managers, which I've done. I've dated music managers before. Yeah. That's fine. But yeah, so it's kind of weird. It's not ideal.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've like dated people I've dated a DJ before, but I've never been in a relationship with somebody in the industry. Like I've been single for God knows how long. So I've dated people and I've seen people in the industry, but like, I don't think, yeah, I've never had a relationship with somebody in the industry as such.
Yeah. I've had a couple, and they've all kind of fallen apart for different reasons, but so, yeah, I mean,
do you find it generally hard to have a relationship in the role of what we do as life?
Yes. Also, part of it was I was really young. And I like after my last one, I like started seeing a therapist. I was like, something's wrong here. I'm not choosing the right people. So I think like I was just young and naive. And then I went through like my party phase.
Yeah.
So that obviously that's not like a very stable place to be dating. But like, I think at this point now it's different. Like stability is something that I'm looking for. Whereas before I was kind of looking for adventure.
Yeah.
And I don't think like any stable relationship exists within adventure.
Yeah.
But now I'm like traveling so much every weekend that I'm like, I just want something like chill, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah, my kind of battle with it is also, it's like, how much time am I willing to give that actually gets taken out of my career? Because there's always got to be compromise, right? And like that evening or that day where I should be in the studio, like I do so much, like touring, podcast, writing music, and anything else that I'm trying, like catching up with, and everything else in the career that you kind of have to do, it takes up so much of your time. And then
it's a 24/7 job.
Yeah, it's not a 9-to-5 at all. It's like literally the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep. And then it's like, how much of that, like, I see my family and my friends a very small part of that. And then how much of that do I want to give up to then give to somebody else more on a full-time basis? And it's like, the compromise is hard for me.
What I've like realized is the ideal situation would be someone that is just really stable. So from personal experience, someone who's really stable, maybe they work in the industry, so they understand the lifestyle. And they also maybe can add value to your life in a way, but also is like really just like cool with not seeing you that often.
Yeah.
Like that is the perfect scenario.
So like a pen pal. You're like,
Wednesday nights, that's when I get to see you. Any other night, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I'm not going to be in town. I'm working. I'm, you know, whatever. But like, that's kind of like the perfect, I think, balance.
I think that sounds perfect. Once a month, once a month I see you and it's great.
And there's no worry about it. We're not like fighting over like attention or anything like that. Like, it's just like chill, like stable chill. Like that is like the perfect scenario, which I do think exists.
I don't think it exists though.
It does. I think it exists.
Do you have any friends that are in a relationship like that?
Where they like see their partner like once a month?
Like, yeah.
Okay, all my friends are single, but no, I mean,
ask Taylor, she's in love now.
Please. With who? Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, she's not a good example. I don't know. I know people that make it work. Mm. I know people that like have found ways. There's plenty of relationships in this industry. So there's obviously
totally,
ways.
Yeah. To yeah. Yeah.
But perhaps you're just also not in that point in your life where you're like willing to make the space at the moment.
Yeah. I'm just super, super selfish, which
be selfish.
I know. Right. Yeah.
You know, I support that. I mean, I kind of like, this year, like whenever I started like dating again, I was like telling people very upfront, like first time, I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I don't have any expectations of anything. This is my schedule. So let's see what happens. Mm. And like, really that kind of weeds out the people that aren't willing to deal with that. Then it's the secondary thing is like, it weeds out the people that like self-combust.
Yeah.
And then you get left with like the good, like the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
Like the people that can handle the lifestyle and like aren't like nervous about what you're doing and things like that, you know?
Yeah. I think honesty is the best way, right? In all walks of life, but like I think in starting out and setting your boundaries at that point where it's like, you're not the be all and end all in my life. Like I don't need you as a person, and this is what's way more important in my life. And if you're willing to slip in when it suits us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think someone who has like a really good sense of self, has their own passions and art or whatever, like I say art, it could be a career.
Yeah.
But like whatever it is, someone that's like really preoccupied with their own life as well. Mm. That's like the perfect mix. Yeah. Cause you don't want someone that doesn't have anything going on in their life. Right. Because then you become their life and that's
dangerous.
Not healthy.
It's really dangerous.
Yeah. Right. And you don't want someone that's going to get like, you know, oh, they don't have time for me. Well, I don't have time for them. You know, like, so you got to find someone that's just like, oh, hey, it's good to see you again.
What's good?
You know?
Yeah, definitely. No, I like that. Talking of relationships, how did the relationship with you and Dirty Bird kind of evolve into where it's at?
Well, so I had been self-releasing music in 2019 to some minimal success, right? Like my first release on this EP that I did, it got like 100,000 plays.
Wow.
All on my own. It was cool. Like I was like, holy crap, I did it. But what I realized is that it didn't necessarily mean I got any fans.
Mm-hmm.
So
Explain that, because I think there's some people that are on here that are like 100,000 100,000 streams means you're clearly successful. Like, why does that not correlate into fans?
Because especially because of Spotify now, it's a passive listener. So it's just someone that discovered my music on a playlist. Mm-hmm. And maybe they do follow me as a result of that, but they're not buying tickets to my shows.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was still a local DJ. So the shows I was playing weren't really notable to begin with. So it just didn't translate into maybe they followed me on Instagram, but it didn't mean that I got ticket buyers.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I made a conscious decision at that point. I was like, I need to work with a label, whatever label comes my way at this point. And I was living with a girl who worked with Dirty Bird, and she's like, look, they're looking for more women. If you want to see if there's something that can happen there. And I was like, all right, cool. So I had a conversation with Barkley, and I was like, the funny thing about this is actually the year prior I told Andy, Claude Von Stroke's wife, because she's like, oh, submit music to me. And at that point I was like, no, I want to go a Fortet route. I don't make Dirty Bird music. I don't know how to, you know? And I was deep in my weird underground stuff. So then a year later, I'm talking to Barkley and I'm like, listen, I have not ever even made anything remotely Dirty Bird in my life. That's not where I come from. I come from a weird underground rave background where I'm playing lights down low parties. And I'm making down tempo music and weird deep house and stuff like that. And he's like, perfect. Cause I guess he was looking to shift the sound anyways. He's like, okay, let's just try this out. Mm-hmm. And of course COVID hit a month later. And he's like, well, this is a really good opportunity for you to hone in on your production and get really, really good at making electronic music while everyone else is quarantined.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And I wrote Red with Steve Darko.
Steve's amazing. Steve's amazing.
Oh, genius.
Yeah.
There's so many geniuses in this industry. It's so easy to just fall into a trap and be like, what am I even doing here? Because there's so many out of this world producers, but that's besides the point. I wrote Red. I wrote Sun Is Hot, which is definitely more in line with my personal taste.
Mm.
Which is a very Miami kind of deep house vibe.
Yeah.
So I wrote, and it's more indie, wrote Sun Is Hot. Then I wrote Psychic Attack. Then I wrote Everything Is Burning and Wet State. And that was all within 2020. So then Barkley's like, oh, okay, this works. He's like, this works for me. And then that's when I started. So then all of 2020, I spent most of the year just collaborating with other people because I had never collaborated with anyone before.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, let me write a song with Ardalan and Mickey Nair and Cats and Dogs and Ernesto and Walker and Royce, all of these people that I would never have had access to had I not had some of the success I had with writing for Dirty Bird.
Mm.
And that was primarily what I did in 2021. So yeah. So now then it expanded, but Barkley was pretty clear that he wanted me to release music, outside of Dirty Bird, that it would be better for everyone, including the label, if I was an artist that was also releasing on Black Book or Pets or something like that.
Yeah. Barkley initially never used to like that. He used to hate it when artists went from one label to the other. And then I think he realized that hang on a minute. This artist is still staying on my label and then also gaining more fans on another label and then bringing them back to my label.
That makes sense.
It's a no-brainer. What Dirty Bird have done community-wise is amazing. And
I agree.
It gave me my career at the beginning. And it's super important to have a community gain fans. Did you see a big change the minute you signed today?
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially because I was doing TV Party, which was the live stream on Dirty Bird's channel.
Yeah.
I was starting to interact with a lot of fans as well. And then the music came out and then I was doing the shows, the Dirty Bird barbecues and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, like, a huge portion of my fans came from like the Dirty Bird community for sure. And that's like such a solid foundation to build a career on. And that's kind of what I realized I needed back in 2019 was like, I need a platform because I could release music, but I certainly don't have the money to like blast it out into everyone's ears.
Also don't think money, sorry to butt in, but I don't think money actually helps anymore.
I think it's kind of like
I was having conversations with A&R from a major record label, and even they were saying like, if the record just doesn't connect, it doesn't connect, and it's not like you can force people to hear it, and with like there's no amount of money, like they can't make it get on Spotify playlists now, they can't do any of this what they used to be able to do.
Yeah. Also, I read this article recently that said that as a result of TikTok and Gen Z, like they're not really listening to new music as much anymore. Mm-hmm. They're listening to like 80s and like 90s, and they're like listening to throwback songs. Well, for them, they weren't even alive, but like,
which makes sense. It's like, which makes sense why the tech house that's going on right now that is like literally sampling 90s hip hop and 90s R&B, why it's popping off so well, because you're taking these amazing records that have done number one, millions and millions of actual sales, not even streams, not even downloads, like record sales, and then turning them into a club record by just putting a tech house beat to it. And everyone's wondering why the fuck are these records doing so well? That's why.
I mean, I think it's cheesy, but that's just my personal thing.
I think it's fucking awful, if I'm honest.
I think it's awful. I get why people do it, though. I mean, like, EDM did the same thing, right? EDM remixes of all your favorite hip-hop songs and stuff like that. Like, I get it. That's never going to go away. It's like a necessary evil. Is it for me? No, but I respect other people that do it and see success through it. But yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I mean, like, that's what they were saying is that, like, a lot of like Running Up the Hill, for instance, is like Gen Z is making older songs popular, which is then flooding the market, and it's making it really hard for like new artists to cut through.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. TikTok is something that I find super fascinating. It's like,
do you use it?
I do use it, and I use it mostly just to like rant or post videos of shows, but I use it to like, for educational things, I guess, like talking about how I got started with Dirty Bird or how I got started with DJing or what my songs are about. My most popular video is me talking about what my song with Artelon is about. And just like the story behind it. So it's kind of like, it's a great platform. I can see like you can really like up your numbers incredibly by just like consistently posting. It's a lot of work, so I don't do that. I would basically have to stop making music. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a full-time job, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm sure there's like an easy way to do it. If I just like did a video every day, like, what's up? This is something funny. And then like put my phone down and like just didn't care. And I think that's this tactic that I saw work with everyone is that if you post every single day for like 2 months, your user engagement will go crazy and like you'll pop off. So
I can't do it. I tried. I tried, and I was just like, oh, this is not authentic to me. I don't see, for me, it just doesn't work. I wish it
maybe
did.
You just haven't found your niche yet.
There is not a niche for me. Like, I was
well, you could just do this. This is like a good example of something you could post on TikTok.
Yeah.
I've been encouraging everyone. I was even talking to Tiet about it. I was like, post a piano video. I want to see a piano video on like TikTok.
Yeah. I occasionally post on these, but honestly, like, I forget about TikTok because I don't even look at the platform. So I forget that it's there. What ideally I need to do is pay somebody to post, to like run my TikTok and just like post.
I'll do.
Yeah. And just like post and
we all wish there was someone to do it.
Yeah, because realistically it's like I enjoy Instagram. I enjoy posting on Instagram and I enjoy interacting with people on Instagram. I hate Twitter, but I barely use Twitter really. I just kind of post and ghost on Twitter. But Instagram's like the one for me. So And it's not even because on TikTok I have barely any followers. It's not even that. I think even if I had a million followers on there, I just couldn't handle it.
It's a lot. I don't know. Once you get into it, it's just ADD. So it's like, once you get into TikTok and like the generated content on there and like posting your own and starting to follow suit with like what people want to see.
Yeah.
When you go back to Instagram, you're like, oh, this is so boring. There's nothing going on over here. It's like a ghost town. So it's kind of, you start to like notice. It is like, it like messes with your mind a little bit.
Maybe I'm just an old boring man that just likes boring places.
You're just a millennial, you know? They just put you in the graveyard over there.
What am I? I don't even know what I am. Am I a millennial?
I don't know. I don't know how old you are.
I'm 32.
Oh yeah, you're a millennial.
What are you?
I'm a millennial also.
When were you born?
93.
Yeah, 90s babies. We're the best. I don't care what anyone says. We're the best.
I believe it.
Like, we had the best of both worlds. We knew.
We knew the good world and the bad world.
Did you know life before the internet?
Yes. But mostly, I remember life when the internet started, because I was in middle school. So I grew up with like Neopets and MySpace.
Yeah. And MSN Messenger.
Yes, AOL. I had AOL.
AOL. AM. Yeah, AIM and AOL wasn't big in the UK. It was only MSN. So like, it was weird. We'd like, I don't know, looking back at it, we're fucking mentalists. We'd spend all day at school and then go home and talk on MSN to our friends all night long.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it was for me as well.
Yeah.
I'd have my AIM thing and be like, surfer chick. 93. Like, I never even surfed back then. Like, I didn't, surfer chick, just projecting who I wanted to be as a 11-year-old. And then I would go and I'd talk to, like all the cute skater boys that I liked.
Yeah.
and skater boys that I've never even met from other high schools. Or I'd end up in like some like AIM chat room and I'd be talking to some guy who loves Slipknot in Michigan. And I'd be like, yeah, I like Slipknot too. Never heard of them in my life. And like, you know, pretending I was like, I was
the cool surfer chick.
I was big on the internet for a while.
Yeah. Having a persona that no one can judge you by. Right.
Right. Yeah. Just creating complete aliases of, it was interesting. But like I have friends.
Oh, that's me. One second. I'm still here.
I'm like, what happened to you?
My camera just overheated. So we're on a different camera now.
Oh, wow. The conversation's too hot.
Yeah, literally. It's the thing with these cameras is that they don't like when you're on them for like 3-4 hours. It's really annoying. Yeah, the internet growing up was really interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. I really like, I like met my first boyfriend in high school on MySpace and AIM. We would talk on AIM every night.
That's cute.
My first very close friend I met on AIM. We're still friends to this day. He's a chef. We met on like MySpace and AIM, and it's just like weird.
It is weird. I never really met anybody online such as that, like that. I had MySpace, and I had AIM after, like, when I got older for music, because you could download, you could get people to send you music and it would automatically download, and then you'd like wake up and you'd have a fuck ton of music.
Oh, nice.
But I didn't really, I met people through Bebo. Can you remember Bebo? Was that a thing?
Oh, I don't know Bebo.
Yeah, I think that was a UK thing. But Bebo was like, it was like the first Facebook. So it's very similar to MySpace, but a little bit different. Like, your page wasn't, it was a bit like less cool, but it was more about meeting friends and stuff.
Interesting. Yeah.
Is MySpace still around?
I think so, but I don't really know who uses it.
No, me neither. Damn. Facebook.
That was a good platform. Yeah, it did not need to die. It didn't need to die. We didn't need Facebook. Look what happened.
Well, the thing is Facebook was amazing when it started. And then it got shit. Like,
I was like one of the first people, I swear I was like one of the first people on Facebook. I had to lie about my age because it was designed for like high school and college.
Yeah.
And I was still in middle school when I signed up.
Rebel.
But
I remember when I first got Facebook, and it was when I was promoting. So it was about like adding as many people from a certain city that like all wanted to listen to house music. And I was trying to like sell tickets to shows, and I still go on Facebook now, and I haven't deleted anyone off there. So like,
oh wow!
Like if I never use Facebook, but if I go on Facebook now, it's like I don't know any of them. Not a single. And you were only allowed like 4,500 friends or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's like 4,500 people, and I probably know about 20 people on there. It's awful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used it really like for friends and stuff. And if I see someone that I don't recognize, I delete them.
You can you come and just delete everyone off mine? But I don't ever use it. I don't ever use it. It's kind of, it's weird how things evolve.
I don't really use it either.
No.
It's just for like the Facebook fan page, mostly.
I just post, is that better? Oh, hang on. So I'm turning this light off because it's fucking bright in my eyes. I just use it. I don't even use it. I just put everything to post through Instagram.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do as well. Yeah. Is like I share it from Instagram.
Fucking social media, eh?
I know. I was talking about this with Barkley. He's like, I just don't understand like how people, because he's just like, I don't understand how people are not like writing more music or like doing like that, you know? And I'm like, Barkley, when you started your career, you didn't have social media to worry about every single day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's like, yeah, but I got press stuff. And I'm like, it's not the same.
So different.
Managing four different accounts is not the same. For TikTok, if it takes me like an hour to write a good TikTok at minimum, who's got time? That's just like chipping away at your life, you know?
Yeah. There's the argument that a good record will kind of overpower any of that.
Well, say that to Aspen Forest, who has released the best indie album of the year, and no one knows it. It's so good.
I think there's a level. You have to send me a link of this album you've gone on about.
I will. It's.
Should we try?
It really feels like AI wrote it.
Really,
it's like it's too perfect.
What's your thoughts on AI making music?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I like it. Well, I don't know if they'll ever be able to really, unless they create AI that is like a sentient being with emotion and stuff like that. I don't think AI will ever really capture emotion.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
fuck AI.
But I'm also like of the philosophy of the tragic artist. So like for me, like, writing music and art and stuff like that is very much like about the human experience, you know?
I think it's a way to express emotions and other people to be able to attach their own emotions and feelings to whatever that is that you're doing.
Right. Yeah. And I really try to be like vague, but specific.
Mm.
So like, sun is hot. I wrote about like global warming, but it also sounds like it's a very sexy song about like, is it me or is it getting hotter? You know, like so I try to keep it like vague, but also very kind of like specific in that way. Same thing with Everything is Burning. I wrote that about like roommate drama.
Yeah.
But it's also about climate change because I was writing it and a mountain was on fire across from me. Actually, like, what's really funny is that Psychic Attack is pretty obvious about what Psychic Attack is about. It's about the news, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny. I had a fan in El Paso come up to me and be like, I know it's not about that, but it really struck a chord with me because I just got out of this terrible relationship and I felt like I was under a psychic attack. And I was like, ah, damn. So it works anyways.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is, like, there's that saying is once the record's out, it's not yours, and it's for everyone else's perception. And I can't remember who it was as an artist. They're like a real famous singer, and they were like, they don't tell the press or anyone what the record's about, because it's about whatever anybody wants it to be about. And the kind of the perception of that is kind of a beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah, I wrote, I have an EP coming out next week, and
it'll be out already by the time this is.
I have an EP out called, the EP is called Get Familiar, but there's a song on it. I wrote it with Ernesto. It's on my own label imprint, called Mi Domina, if you want to find it. Anyway, so the song is called God Complex. And I wrote that song initially mocking DJs on Twitter. Cause I was like, it's just like, everyone thinks they know so much on Twitter, right? Like everyone's got this God complex that they know everything. But now with everything going on in the world, I'm like, oh, maybe it means more than that. I'm like, the meaning changes for me also. So I try to keep it vague because it kind of fits with the times that way.
Yeah, I think fucking hell, Twitter is a wild place as well, thinking about it.
It's the Wild West of opinions that we didn't need.
100%. And people taking things the wrong way.
Yeah.
It's not good. Not good. Nala, we've just done an hour and a half.
Okay. Let's wrap this. I was like, when does this end?
Let's wrap this up.
We're just talking at this point. We're not even.
I was like, let's call this one. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we go, how can people follow you and get part of the Nala life? I don't know what just happened then. The audio went weird.
Okay, well, I guess you could follow me on at This Is Nala. Most of my socials are This Is Nala, some variation of that. So
amazing. Thanks so much for coming on, mate. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. It was so great catching up with you.
I'm in LA in the end of July.
Oh, cool.
So let's try catch up.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. Peace out, mate. Keep safe. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. And that's a wrap. Thanks to Nala for coming on. Please go share. Please send it to your mates. Subscribe. Keep safe. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.